Good morning. This is Focus 580. It's our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. It's the first Wednesday of the month, and it has been our tradition for a long time now to talk about cooking on the first Wednesday in the first show with this guy that we like to call our chef in residence. It's a purely honorary title, ladies and gentlemen. We always have a good time when he's here. Doyle Moore is his name. And we talk about food, and we have talked about cooking from different places in the world and different regions of this country. We've done programs that focused on a particular dish. And just put the question out there, how do you approach this thing? How is the way that you make this different from the way that other people make it? And we had a good time talking about cooking, exchanging stories, exchanging recipes. It's one of the most fun shows that we do all month, and we're pleased to have him back and to be doing it again here this morning. And his suggestion was that we could talk a little bit this morning about Tex-Mex cooking, and that is kind of like it sounds. It's a food that's based on some combination of cultures, traditions, ingredients from Mexico and from Texas. And so that's what we'll be doing today. Your questions, comments, recipes, your input is certainly welcome. All you have to do is give us a call, and you can be part of the show. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. By the way, this program is made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, Homemade Pies by Inge, Gourmet Foods, Cards and Gifts, as well as Creative Crafts, Zimmer Art Gallery, Vintage Street Mercantile, Vintage Vogue Florals, Samantha's Treasures, and Audiovisual Innovators. They're all housed in the same buildings in downtown Monticello. Welcome back.
Yes, thank you very much.
Maybe also we ought to do the one caveat because to the show, because you also said, because we've done chili is an important Tex-Mex thing, but because we've done entire shows about chili, saying, if you wouldn't mind to share your secret, you'd tell us about, because everybody probably thinks, well, mine is the best. But we sort of said, well, let's set that aside. Let's say, well,
yeah, King's X on chili.
Yeah, King's X on chili. But there's plenty of other things.
Oh, that's
that we
just
talk
it.
About. What, and here we were talking about this a little bit before we got going, that perhaps people who are really devotees of true Mexican cuisine might kind of sneer a little bit at Tex-Mex and say, well, this is sort of an adulteration of the Mexican tradition, and it maybe they think, or also I guess maybe they're concerned that people think that Tex-Mex is Mexican food, and they would say, no, it's maybe there's some similarities, but Mexican tradition is a whole other thing, very different, big regional differences.
And you could also say it the other way around, that a person say, this is this kind of food, a Mexican mm-hmm. food. No, I like this taste or that taste. It's a curious situation. And one of the reasons that I was thinking about it, indeed, was that it is one of the favorite foods of our current president. And so you were going to be seeing a lot more about it. And I just wanted to know what people are doing with those tastes. Also, I'm well aware that this thing, which we have now branded only of recent as Tex-Mex, which I thought was sort of a funny thing when it came out several years ago. And we've had it around for quite some time, and there have been a lot of innovations and changes that people have done, making things more available to themselves or making changes that they like. And so there's I think that there's a whole new area of people who are enjoying the food very much.
Mm-hmm. Well, what exactly is the difference between Mexican food, or let's say the cooking that you find in Mexico at the border region in northern Mexico, because the coast is different and other
yes.
places is different. So the cooking that's in sort of near to Texas, is there a really big difference between that cooking and then this cooking that you find on the other side of the border?
Oh, very much. Yeah, very, very much. Because you see, it doesn't depend on seafood. and it would be very, very simple foods. Now, a long time ago, probably at the turn of the century, there was a good use of pork. Now, it wasn't always there would be beans and corn things and maybe vegetables in different ways. They might indeed be wrapped up for the convenience of making a little quick food that could be carried or whatever. And those things were what were elaborated. And only recently has the taste of pork been exchanged for beef. Pretty much. So there's some. So it's sort of agricultural product rather than going out and there's a lot of chicken and a lot of fish and other things. So part of it is that, because it's sort of a landlocked chunk, you know, it's big and vast, and you have what's around. So locally, it is meats that make those different from a lot of the other. And then since it is little, what we're really talking about is sort of the finger food that all of a sudden became convenient enough to make for other people, but it would never be used as a main meal in Mexico. That's the biggest difference. It's truck stop food, and then there'll be subtle changes to it. The gravies, there'll be gravies that you never could imagine are put on it, and swathed over enchiladas, and that just isn't done in a native cooking style. But it sure is big in Texas truck stops.
Mm-hmm. Is there a Native American influence in it? Maybe not.
Not as strong as the fact you could point to it, because a lot of Native American foods are also stews and other complex things, and aren't little pick me up things that are done. Probably the best influence of Native influence would be the variation of chilies that are from New Mexico and Arizona. Those particular chilies, as opposed to the other chilies that are used in the northern Mexican cooking, there'd be just some subtle regional differences of what's grown, because I do know that the Chimayo chili is totally different from anything else, and that's grown way up in the northern part of New Mexico, everyone's very proud of those regional chilies. That's what would make the differences. So have you had a taco recently?
Have I had a taco recently? No, I guess not. I think probably the thing that we do and have found is a good way, particularly to use if we have some leftover meat. Like, for example, this winter, every once in a while, we really had the urge to roast a chicken and have that one night. Mm. And then you have all this meat that you want to do something with, and particularly the dark meat that sort of shreds up.
Yes.
Kind of nice. It's just I would take that and make a sauce, what I think of as sort of a Southwest influenced kind of sauce, and kind of shred up that meat and cook it in that sauce, and then use flour tortillas and make some homemade refried beans and sort of the appropriate garnishes, and kind of wrap it up in the tortilla and eat it that way. That, to me, that has good taste, and it's also a great way to use this chicken that you have.
Exactly.
But there are other things that you could also. I've done it with leftover pork, with any kind of leftover meat. Works real well.
I do think that one of the innovations that I was talking about that has really become very popular and people have taken to it quite a bit is indeed the use of chicken in that. There are a lot of chicken salads now that really are what we want to call taco salads that are based on chicken. And that's a recent innovation of Tex-Mex style of cooking. I think that it's getting away from a lot of the heavy gravies and sauces and is going more to I find it interesting where the salsa makers are now advertising their product as something to cook with rather than something to dress the dishes with. Mm-hmm. And these changes are happening. So I thought we could talk about that today. Somebody will have made an innovation, and we'll get one pretty soon.
Well, we have a caller here to talk with. We'll do that. And I should, I guess, and introduce again our guest. This is the man we like to call our chef in residence here on Focus 580, Doyle Moore. This is our monthly program on cooking. And his suggestion was, let's talk a little bit about Tex-Mex cooking, that food that's based on this combination of cultures and traditions of Texas and Mexico, a kind of cooking that's starting to get more and more attention and getting more popular. A lot of people are exploring it. And questions, comments, recipes, any and all of that is welcome. 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. And here's a caller in Kankakee, line four. Hello.
Good morning, David. Good morning, Doyle.
Hello.
I'm really glad I get a chance to hear this morning. I'm on a personal quest to round up all the best salsa recipes in the world.
Well, that's very good.
I hope that applies to your program.
It does indeed, because the awareness of various salsas and the fact that they aren't just tomatoes and onions and cilantro ground up is exactly what I'm talking about. People are becoming more aware of the variety and the possible uses. So how far have you gotten on your quest?
I've made some good salsas and some bads. Every now and then I make a really great one. I'm collecting recipes from all over the place. And I hope if anybody else has any recipes that's listening, they'll phone them in too.
Well, more than likely they will. Give us your favorite and how you use it.
Okay, right now my favorite is a sun-dried tomato salsa that I'm making that I use I rehydrate the tomatoes in orange juice.
In orange juice, I see.
Right. And this one's kind of unusual that it doesn't have any garlic. I left out the garlic on this one, and it really works. So that's a good one.
Is it just the tomatoes then, and they're ground up?
I'll give you. Salsas are. It's hard to give amounts.
Yes.
It's hard for me to give amounts, but because everybody's got a different way of portioning out the amounts to get the taste they want.
That's right.
But the ingredients I use are sun-dried tomatoes, and they're the really dried ones. They're
yes.
the ones in the oil. And I rehydrate them, and I like to use fresh-squeezed orange juice, too. That makes a big difference.
Yes.
Rehydrate them for an hour or two, and then I use a Cuisinart to chop up the tomatoes. And I reserve the orange juice, and then after I take out the tomatoes from the processor, then I throw in whatever kind of peppers I'm going to use, and I really like to use chipotles.
Oh yes, now are these the canned ones or the dry ones?
That's the only kind I've ever found around here is the canned ones.
We have dry ones around here. I know they got them at the Art Mart because I got a jar of them the other day. They're dry.
And I think just in the regular supermarket,
okay,
I've seen it too.
I'm like 90 miles from you guys, so
wait
till the next time I'm
come on and visit.
Right. Anyway, I toss my chipotles into the processor, and you vary the heat of the your salsa by
how
many peppers you throw in there. I like to throw the whole can in.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, but you know what? The final result is not as hot as you would think. For some reason, maybe it's the sweetness.
Tomatoes cut that down. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that tomatoes do. And in the border cooking, tomatillos are being used a lot for tomatoes. But both of those acids will cut down the hot pepper. So that's how it's used. Mm-hmm. So you're right.
And with the peppers, I toss in the cilantro and the onion. And I bought a quarter of a lime.
Oh, a lime, yes.
Yeah, I still like to put a lime in there. Some people leave the lime out of the tomato stuff, but I like to throw it in there. And then after I get them chopped up, then I'll toss the tomatoes back in. I mean, the sun-dried tomatoes back in and process it all together. And usually for the first day, those sun-dried tomatoes are still going to be absorbing liquid.
Yes, they are.
So I'll, with that reserved orange juice, I'll I can maintain the right the liquidity that you want with that.
Now, what do you use this for?
I use it just for dipping.
I see.
We've got a real good source of, if I'm not making my own chips, which
yes.
I like to make baked ones.
Oh, yes.
Corn, out of corn tortillas. But I like the, they're a little bit harder to find. They're real thick, saltless tortilla chips. They're probably made in Mexico because it's hard to read all the label on it.
Well, that'd be a good clue right there.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, but I have a question for you. When you're preparing tomatillas
yes.
for your salsa, do you cook them or roast them in any way, and how do you do it?
One way is to roast them. You could char them on the top. They want to be done something to. Some baking is a good thing. Mostly the recipes that I know of ask to boil them. But I've been reading about is give a new try and roast the you could grill them outside. You could grill them, but that the smokiness to the tomatilla cuts down the sharp acidity of it a little bit and makes it quite tasty. So I've been reading about roasting, but the most traditional way is to boil them for maybe 5 to 8 minutes, and then when you chop them up or grind them up, they're a little softer and they're not quite as astringent.
Right. I've tried everything from double boilers to broiling them, and everything seems to work. What doesn't seem to work is microwave. I don't like the way they turn out.
You see, since what you're looking for is a roasting, browning flavor coming from that, it won't come from the microwave. No.
Well, one last question before I hog up all
yep.
your time. Could you recommend any good cookbooks?
Yes. The Border Cookbook, The Authentic Home Cooking of America, Southwest, and Northern Mexico by Jamison, Jamison. And that is a Harvard Common Press book, and it's available for $17.95, except I bought the last copy last night. And I have it with me.
That's great.
That's but yes, and that's exactly about what we're talking about. Rather than the pure taste of regional Mexico, this is the Border Cookbook where all of these things come from.
Mm-hmm.
And probably if you are interested in Mexican food and other salsa recipes, you might, if you haven't ever looked at any of the cookbooks written by Rick Bayless.
Oh, Rick yeah. Bayless, is they're really good.
I love his TV show.
Yeah.
It's a really nice show, Mexico yeah. One Plate at a Time. And I think if I remember right, he has a book that has a lot of salsas in it, and
yes.
kind of the idea of the book is to get you to explore different kinds of chilies and to understand that.
Right.
His point is that it's not just something that's hot, that the chilies, different chilies do have different flavors. And by getting if you can get the fresh ones of different kinds, and he gives you shows you different ways to do different salsas based on different chilies. And so that, I would just say, anybody who's interested in that kind of cooking, if you don't know about Rick Bayless, he has a couple of restaurants in Chicago, has this show that's been on public TV, and is really an up-and-coming cook of that style. So that'd be something to check out.
Well, thank you very much.
You bet.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Bye.
We have a couple of people here standing by.
All right. I was just going to say that one of the major differences between Tex-Mex cooking and regional Mexican cooking, one of the major differences is that thing called chili powder, which was invented to imitate the combination of the chili queens in the 1890s. A German manufacturer turned out this chili powder, which is a kind of chilies, cumin and garlic and oregano, all in a packet. Now that's what chili powder is all mm-hmm. about. But powdered chilies is another problem. That's real chilies that are simply ground up. And you see, by just dumping that whole can in there and mixing it up, you have a sort of a ready-made altogether taste, and that's where this sort of truck stop gravy sauce came from. Was, oh, you put in this much of this, so it was a shortcut and an immediate answer. But that's and a difference in taste and a difference in the texture of what you're getting. And so we kind of keep moving away from that or back to it in this case.
Yeah, and for people who are interested in sort of exploring different kinds of chilies now because there's an interest in
and
this kind
availability,
of cooking,
yes.
You can get pure, just like ground ancho. If you just wanted that one, you could buy that or different kinds of pasilla or and of course, cayenne is another ground chili that's used in that kind of cooking too, as well as a lot of other places.
But some time ago, that wasn't available, so that's where the Tex-Mex kind of got its roots in, because it took what was available.
Well, we have some other folks
to
talk
to. Yes,
let's keep talking. Let's do that. We'll go next to Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Is that me?
Yes.
Okay, I just wonder if you've ever heard of pineapple salsa. And if you have a recipe or if anybody out there has a recipe.
Pineapple salsa.
Yeah.
I think that there are some new ones that they're aware of using fruit. I've been reading a little bit about it. I wouldn't doubt but what there is one. Let me see if I No, I don't see a pineapple in my book.
Okay.
Not here, but somebody will have one because I do know about that.
Okay. Well, I hope somebody calls.
Okay,
in.
They will.
Thank you.
You
bet.
Bye.
Well, thank you for the call. Let's
pineapple salsa.
Go back here to Clinton, Indiana, line number two for another caller. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Wonderful program. I used to live in South Texas for extended time. And
yes.
I got to where I could cook up a good batch of fajitas.
Oh, yeah. Before
for the life of me, I can't do it anymore. I forgot. My wife is very disturbed because she says they really tasted good.
Well,
I just wondered if you got a, you know, an idea
of how to what to put in fajitas.
Yeah. I can't flank steak. I always used to use as round or something like that, but I'll just hang up and listen.
All right. Somebody will help us with that.
Okay.
Yes.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call. I'm just, in response to the last lady who asked about pineapple salsa, there's this website that I like, and I mentioned before on the program, that's called Epicurious, where they have recipes from the major cooking magazines like Gourmet, Bon Appetit. All you got to do is type in what you want, and it will come up with recipes. And here I have 11 recipes for that are salsas that use pineapple, and maybe just we'll pick one here just to take a look at what some of the things are, because my computer is a little on the slow side. Oh, there we go. This is grilled shrimp with pineapple salsa, for example, and let's look at and it looks like here the salsa is just, it's a fresh pineapple, some red onion, some cilantro, and some jalapeno. So that's...
And then is it chopped up or pureed or just
it's,
chopped?
The pineapple is grilled and then it's chopped up with the other stuff chopped up and put in a bowl with a little oil, a little olive oil, and some lime juice. And then you season it with salt and pepper. So it sounds like it's kind of, if you just said, okay, what would a pineapple salsa be? You'd take some of the stuff that you would have in a regular salsa and add pineapple. Well, maybe I'll look at some of these other recipes.
But then grilled or
but the pineapple is grilled.
That would be
nice. That would give it a different sort of, it would really bring out the sweetness. It would caramelize some of the sugars, and that would be all right. Let's go to Downs here for another caller. Line number four. Hello?
Hello.
Yes.
I am wondering what's going to happen with Mexican cooking, American home Mexican cooking, not done by Hispanics, because of all the availability of grocery stores now. I'm closest to Bloomington Normal, and there are three places that are either solely Mexican grocery
stores,
one that's combined with other ethnic cooking, but there are a lot of things now that are available that simply weren't available.
That were not available. I agree with you, and that is part of the changes, or actually the broadening of the experiences. The because I go and find things that I didn't know that I could get before. There's a ground up annatto seed paste, and I like using that. It makes it look hotter than it is. It's not hot at all. But that's a new product that I've just learned about, and we have that currently at one of our stores here in town as well. And so there will be change, but I think in the long run the changes will be more broader, real Mexican cooking than just using them as an imitation sauce that you're going to put something else in. I have an idea there will be a resurgence in real Mexican cooking with the real materials available to more people in the Midwest and places like that. But I also think that there's going to be some of the ideas of look what happened to the idea of the Pacific Rim cooking, where you're taking all of these island and Asian tastes, and all of a sudden they sort of got mixed up with the cuisine nouvelle of France, and here are new tastes, and Wolfgang Puck has got Oriental restaurant. I mean, so the whole. I think that things like that will happen. There will be broader uses, and then people will just simply carry it into their own kitchens.
Yeah, I think that people are going to start using them for other things.
And they'll use them for other things. And I know that some people are doing that. They must be. They have to be, because they're inventive and want things to happen.
I have a question to ask you. One of the stores had something that I had never seen before, and the clerk who said these were from, I think he said they were from southern Mexico, and he was from the north, but he said they're garbanzos. And I said, you know, I know what garbanzos are. These are green. These are fresh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
A fresh garbanzo? No, I don't know about that at all.
They're a very small pod, and it's kind of a papery, it's sort of, well, it's green and it's wet. It's not dried, but it's a thin, you know, not a fleshy pod. And there's one, seems to be one garbanzo in each little pod.
And are you to shuck them?
No, he said he was at the wrong, you know, he was from the wrong part of Mexico, and I haven't seen any reference to them. But he said he thought they either ate them raw, which I can't quite imagine, or fried them, he thought.
I'd kind of vote for frying too,
yeah,
because I know that in India chickpeas are roasted and sometimes kind of cooked on top of the stove, and so I would guess that the chickpea responds to that kind of cooking.
Even there, I've never heard of green ones.
I've never
heard. They do that. They soak them and then fry them and make them a snack food.
Yes.
But
yes.
The green ones were just a whole new thing.
Well, that sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I think that your question is well-founded. What are we going to do when faced with all these new tastes? That's good.
Do you have time for a quick recipe?
Yes, please.
David, this is your chicken or your leftover meat taco thing.
Okay.
And I do this in the summertime, and I buy one of those supermarket chickens.
Ah.
So I don't have to worry about, you know.
That's a very good idea.
For a long time. 2 cups of chicken. And 4 ears of corn, and you cook that and then cut it off the cob. Mix it and the chicken with an avocado chopped up, some lime juice, a chopped tomato, some fresh serrano or jalapeno chilies, and cilantro.
That sounds...
This is a cold filling for tacos.
There you go.
It is
delicious.
Sounds
very good.
Sounds good to
sounds
me.
Good. You can add the other taco stuff that... that you like.
Yeah, you could make it wetter or drier, right, or other sauces. Oh,
it's a real quick one, and the corn is just a nice, nice flavor.
And you see, this is what I'm talking about. This is not an old recipe. It's a new innovation because all of a sudden, I mean, come on, if Wendy's is making fajita wraps, then, you know, something is happening to people's want for this kind of taste.
Well, I think that the flour tortilla.
That was a big innovation, wasn't it?
It's something that's just been accepted whole scale. I mean,
yes.
In the U.S.
Yes.
It is one of those things that has been so useful.
Of course, I love the person who says, well, actually, I prefer the corn tortilla, and they're going to go back to that. And I think, well, but you're lucky enough that you've got them both to do.
Exactly.
Isn't that it?
Exactly. Yeah.
I like that. Well, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Well, we're a little past the midpoint
here. Oh, dear.
With this man we like to call our chef in residence. Doyle Moore is his name. The first Wednesday of the month in the 10 o'clock hour, he stops by. We talk about food and always have fun talking about various kinds of dishes and exchanging recipes. And if you have a question or a comment or a recipe or you just want to call in and say hello, that's fine. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line, so if it would be long-distance call, we'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. 333-WILL and a toll-free 800-222-WILL. Is there a particular recipe that you'd like to...
I have found a recipe for the gentleman who had lost his ability to do South Texan fajitas.
Okay.
And so I'll try to make this as quick as possible because it's really not a great difficult bit. But one of the things that this person in this book has done, and it says there's a lot of changes, like many home cooks today, he relies on bought salad dressing and dried spices, but the result is exactly like the old one. So 1 cup of herb and garlic or Italian salad dressing, 12 ounces of beer, 1 large onion chopped up, and the juice of 3 or 4 limes, 3 tablespoons of chili powder, and then minced fresh cilantro, pepper, Worcestershire, cumin, and cayenne. Those are going to vary. But what it is on the outdoor grill, you're going to grill these and let the ashes get down to gray ash and place the steaks directly over the fire and grill them to medium rare about 5 or 6 minutes. Then cut the steaks across the grain diagonally into finger-length strips. Pile them on a platter. Accompany it with tortillas, pico de gallo, and guacamole. And then you make your own. Mm-hmm. So but it doesn't have to be all of that stuff made up into a marinade. You don't let that sit for a particularly long time. It is done more quickly. Some people think that it should sit for a long time, but this fellow says no, don't do it. So it's really just a very light a marinade based on the Italian salad dressing. That it could be oil free if you like that, or it could be a little bit of oil, because that's simply going to keep it from burning on the grill. And then things like lime and onion and other things are the flavors that go with it. So that wasn't very difficult. That is on page 178 of the Border Cookbook.
Okay, by Jameson and Jameson.
By Jameson and Jameson.
And it's got a lot of good recipes in
there. Oh, goodness, yes.
I talked to them when the book came out. I'm not sure how long ago that has been, maybe 3-4 years, I don't know. But it's out now in paperback, and so would not be terribly expensive, or maybe you could find it at the library. It's got a lot of
1995.
That long ago.
That long ago. And I thought, and since it won the James Beard Foundation Award for Excellence, I thought it was recent.
Okay. Well,
where have we been?
Lord knows. Here's somebody else in Eureka to talk with on our line number 4 right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Regarding getting chilies, I think there are some mail-order sources, and I think some of these might be over in New Mexico or someplace.
Yes, you're right.
Can you give me any numbers?
Oh,
phone numbers?
Dear, no. Let me look. People, places, and products. We've talked about this before when we're asking for that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one place would be call the operator in Hatch, Hatch, New Mexico.
Yeah.
Now, that's not my favorite chili, but I do know that it's a very small town, and I did read once that anybody in town would know exactly who to send you to. And now, just a minute, Santa Fe. All right, here we go. Let's try this. There is the Santa Cruz, C-R-U-Z,
yeah,
Chili and Spice Company, P.O. Box 177,
Box what?
177.
Yes.
This is the town in Arizona. T U M A C A C O R I.
T U M A C A.
Yes.
C O R I.
Yes, Arizona. 85640.
Yes.
Now they have a telephone.
All right.
602.
Yes.
398.
Yes.
2591.
All right. And they 602.
Yes.
398. Then what?
2591.
All right.
And they are producers of a private line of chili staples with particular emphasis on products made from the mild pods in Arizona.
Yes.
That's what it says. That'll give you a start.
That is very fine.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling.
Okay. And I'm sure that if one had internet access, you could find more sources for mail order chili than
yes.
you could possibly ever need or want. So that's one kind of thing. But I know not everybody has the internet, but I'm sure if you had that, you type chili into your browser, you'd probably get a few thousand hits. And there would be plenty of people who'd be happy to provide you with chili. Here's one of our office staff, Joan Harshberger, came in and handed me a recipe that's really sort of an alternative, if you like shrimp.
Oh, yeah.
And who doesn't? To the shrimp sort of cocktail sauce that we all know. Here, the suggestion is basically to use salsa. And here, you could use whatever kind of salsa that you want. But their suggestion is that you do the thing. You take your shrimp, you boil them, you cook them. Now, here's the thing. If you're going to get good fresh shrimp, you don't want to overcook them.
Nope, that turned to rubber.
You bring the water to a boil.
Yes.
You put the shrimp in.
Yes.
And when it comes back to a boil again, it's done.
Yes.
And it takes about, I don't know, three or four minutes.
3 or 4 minutes, yes.
So then you take your shrimp out and you chill them. And then the suggestion is to take your salsa, put that into a bowl, and put some avocado slices in there, and just use that as a dip. Instead of your old bottled cocktail sauce or the kind you're
sort of
used to.
That'd be kind of nice because it would be a little bit thicker and have a little more body to it. And you could mm-hmm. have a tortilla chip on the side to give you a little more substance when you're in. That'd be a good taste, too. Well, mm-hmm. What do you think a chili sauce is?
Well, I guess it's
you know, it's this ground up and put into a bottle and sold to you. And so we've depended on that for a long time.
And making fresh salsa is really easy.
Oh, it is.
It's not that hard.
I remember the first time that somebody came to my house and made it. They were from California, from Santa Monica, and I had never gotten a hold of fresh cilantro, which now you just go to the grocery store and pick it up while you're buying a loaf of bread, you mm-hmm. know. It used to be something very difficult to get. My feeling was it smelled like old socks. I just thought it was a strange, strange flavor. But I've come to, of course, like it a lot. But I remember that first time we tasted it, we laughed about, now it's time to throw in the old socks.
Well, it does have a very strong
flavor. It is strong.
Flavor.
And
I think maybe it may be something of an acquired
I know there are a lot of people that do not like it at all.
And maybe also if you're cooking with it and you have not used it before, go light. Maybe just try putting a little bit in and see what you think. And I would guess that over time then you might get to like it, and then you would put you
not,
would end up putting
not
more.
Me, not now. I not put you. At least a cup chopped in. I just chop until I'm done and throw it all in. I like it. I use it in Indian cooking and in Chinese and some Thailand cooking a lot.
Well, isn't one of the names for it Chinese parsley?
Yes, but I don't know what the Chinese call it. I do not know what that's called. But you will find it named that. It was named that before we got the name given to us by the grocery stores of cilantro. It was called Chinese parsley in the grocery stores. But I heard about cilantro from a Mexican woman many years ago in this town, and I had never heard of it. Oh, she says you can't cook without cilantro, and I was getting coriander and growing it and having my own because that's all it is.
And that's what it is. It's the green part of the.
It's the green coriander. Green coriander.
That the little seeds come from that we then grind up
exactly
to the spice
exactly.
coriander.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's all been in my lifetime.
Well, we have about 10 minutes left. If you want to call in, have a recipe, have a question, want to talk with us, 333-WILL or toll-free 800-222-WILL, whatever, whichever of those numbers works for you. We're talking here this morning about a little bit about Tex-Mex food. That is the food that's inspired by this combination of culture, ingredients, techniques of both Texas and Mexico, something that's becoming more and more popular. So questions are welcome. And maybe also for our first caller who said he was looking for good salsa recipes, if you have one, you could maybe give us a call.
Another recipe. What I was describing before is most of the Tex-Mex tastes that one is talking about when they're talking about this food are tamales and tacos and gorditas. We now know what gorditas are. A little dog told me. And flautas and enchiladas and chili rellenos and burritos. Those are the standard thing that you will find in all of the Tex-Mex restaurants in Texas. And then most of them are covered with a strange gravy, and that gravy starts out again with a whole jar of chili powder, and then it's cooked up a little bit and thinned down, and then masa harina is put in it and it's thickened up more. And actually, it's a gravy; it's not a sauce; it's a gravy, and so that's one of the major differences.
Here are some other folks
to talk
with.
More folks, good.
Both in Champaign. First is line one. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I have a simple salsa recipe.
Good.
Great.
This is stolen from Rick Bayless's cookbook.
That's okay. Well, you're giving him credit, so that's fine.
It's only three ingredients, tomatillos, garlic, and chipotles.
Oh.
And roast the garlic in a pan with the skins on, and dry chipotles, if you can find them. Roast them lightly and rehydrate. And roast the tomatillos, skin them or husk them, I guess.
Take the husk off, yes.
Yes, and roast them under a broiler for just a couple minutes until they're blackened or soft and lightly blackened.
Uh-huh.
Chop up the chipotles, seed the chipotles, chop them up, chop up your roasted garlic, throw it all in a food processor, and process it until it's, very, very smooth. This is not a chunky salsa.
Oh, all right, yes.
It's a fairly bold salsa. And that's it. Balance it with sugar and salt. A little bit of sugar if your tomatillos are bitter. Just a little bit
of sugar, yes, and that's always a good thing if you're using tomatoes anyway, a touch of sugar on that.
You can get all of this at the local. Well, getting the dry chipotles is difficult, and I strongly recommend them over the canned.
Where are you?
I'm in Champaign, and I visit Houston once a year. And
oh, yes.
Bring home a big bag full, but I have found them at the Mexican grocery in town.
At the Mexican grocery, and they're also at the Art Mart, the dried chipotles.
Is that right?
Yep.
Okay, and Amco. I've seen them there as well.
Yes. Yeah.
And I
yes.
think, I'm pretty sure that I bought them at one of the other supermarkets, so either at Jerry's or at Schnucks.
Schnucks has got them new, yes,
yeah,
in that new area.
Be careful, and I came in late. I don't know if you talked about this, but these chilies come in a million different types. I mean, the chipotle, I think, is basically a jalapeno.
Yes,
it's
a smoked
jalapeno.
Smoked jalapeno.
There are two or three kinds, chili morita and chipotles, and there's the light brown dry chipotles, and you don't want those. You want the dark black.
Purple ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Black.
And I found those to be harder to find. You can find the light brown ones. But canned is okay if you can't get anything else.
In adobo sauce.
Right.
Yes.
Right. But if you can do them with dried.
With the dried ones.
It's really nice, and it's so simple. Three ingredients.
Great.
Well, that is good. And look, they're broiled and roasted. It's going to be nice and smoky.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've never served this and not had people just go, wow, and just, make it as hot as you want with the chipotles.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's great.
Another one. That's good.
And that's great that it is so simple. It just has the three ingredients, but they're all going to have really big, big bold flavors,
as
them guys used to say on the Food Network.
Big,
but we like the big bold flavors. Let's go to Champaign here, line number two. Hello.
Hi. guy. What I really remember about Tex-Mex cooking in the 60s, which was really cool. I mean, they had
yes.
chain restaurants there. One I remember in particular had a little Mexican flag in the middle of the table. It was about a foot high, and you would raise that up to let the server know you wanted more food.
Oh, yes.
It was a buffet, but they wouldn't actually
serve. What was that chain? Is it El Charro?
I was like 10 years old. I only have
I think that was a device that El Charro did. I ran into that in Denver, Colorado, and you'd raise the flag and they'd bring you more sopapillas, and then you lower the flag, and then they'd lower the flag and you wanted some more, you raise the mm-hmm. It was only about less than a foot high. Yeah. Oh, I remember that. Yes. Yeah, that's El Charro's or El Charrito.
Yeah, it was some chain. I mean,
yes.
I had your standard colonial Texas kind of mix. And what I think from someone who lived in Mexico and with Tex-Mex, the real difference compared to at least what I was eating in central Mexico was the amount of meat. You know, in Mexico, certainly if you order carnitas, you know, which is pretty much a pork fajita.
Yes.
I mean, you can pay by the kilo as you go, but in most places there was more emphasis probably on the carbohydrate, I would say, unless you were getting a meat dish. You know, there'd be a little less, but everything was in that ubiquitous red gravy.
That's the red gravy I'm talking about,
yeah.
Yes.
And that would probably be the real secret to Tex-Mex, I would think.
I think so. That's that from what I've been reading about it. It is that strange truck stop Tex-Mex gravy.
Well, some of our local restaurants here actually make very reasonable facsimile of it. The other thing I've learned just about Mexican cooking in general is to, when you start with basically a spaghetti sauce, is to add a cup of burgundy to it, but no salt, and then it takes forever to cook it down.
I mean, oh,
it takes
yeah.
like 6 or 7 hours
yes.
before it doesn't taste like grape juice. But by the time you've cooked off the grape flavor, you still have the salty taste of the wine, but not the grapey flavor of the burgundy. And that is, I think, a real secret of at least central Mexican cooking. I don't know if it would be for Tex-Mex to have the burgundy.
They wouldn't take that long to do it.
Yeah.
That would be the first clue, is it has to be faster and more immediate and ready-made stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes together really good.
Yeah, and I've never seen anything like that. I've never tasted anything like that. Now, I don't know if they have jarred Mexican sauces now that we'll be getting. You know, certainly most of the stores have a wonderful variety nowadays.
Isn't that good? Isn't that good? Yeah.
And what I really like is the moles, because
there are 3 or 4 available in this town. Yes.
Well, and La Preferida seems to have cane sugar in it, and I don't know if Mexican cane sugar is that different from American brown sugar. Hopefully not just white sugar.
No, it is great. It is greatly different.
And I think that's actually an important part
yes.
of why the mole, because I've, you know, used recipes to make mole, and they just never.
The sugar that is used in Mexico is very dark brown and very special, and just isn't anything like brown sugar at all.
I'm going to have to jump in here, guys. I'm sorry to get
Whoops.
In between you two of you, but we're going to have to quit because we're out of time.
You mean NPR is calling for our time?
Well, first of all, the market report, and then NPR.
Yes.
I want to say thanks to everybody who called in. Thanks also to our friend here, Doyle Moore, for being here. And will we see you next month?
June? I'm thinking, perhaps not.
Okay. Well, we'll work that out later.
Yeah, we'll work that out.
Okay. The man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore, generally is with us here the first Wednesday of every month. We talk about cooking.